RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Okay, Adam Crichton, it's good to have you back after a bit of a gap. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm pleased to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back too. Let's whiz through some of the stories that we're interested in hearing you tell us about. First up, and we talked with Naomi Wolf about a week ago about this, and that is Trump's position on abortion now, putting it back to the states, right, is what he's saying. Is that working for him?
Well, look. I mean, I think it's the right position. We can talk about that in a bit. But is it working for him? Well, perhaps not, because we've seen in the last few days, at least here, that Republicans have come out with this somewhat interesting policy to pay for IVF for free for everyone. And that's quite a novel idea in the US because there's no free healthcare here, as you know. And, of course, the thinking there is that, you know, he's basically hemorrhaging support on this abortion issue, and they need to neutralize it in some way by coming up with a new policy. And so I guess, you know, to answer your question, his stance has not been working in that sense, and they're kind of panicking a little bit. But look, you know, the election's still, you know, more than 2 months away. And I think it's probably fair to say a lot of people just don't know what his actual stance is. There's a lot of fear-mongering around what Republicans would supposedly do. And there's this complete lie that that Trump would try to ban abortion nationwide. And that's something that the Democrat Party from Kamala Harris down keeps saying. And it's, you know, it's certainly wrong. So I think, you know, I mean, of course, both sides exaggerate and lie sometimes. That's politics. But I think that's probably the most egregious lie of the campaign, is that Trump would somehow try to ban abortion. I mean, if you look at his statements, he clearly does not care passionately about the issue and doesn't want to talk about it and is very happy that it's gone back to the states. And I think that's probably a good stance long term, I think, for Republicans, just to say, look, we'll leave it to the states. You know, that's democracy, right? Let the states decide through their democratic processes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly hurting to some extent because he's had to introduce this new policy.
How much influence in this election does the white working woman have? And I mention that because Naomi Wolf, mention her again, made a point of that they have a lot of power in this election, and that could influence the ultimate outcome. And this issue is kind of in that zone, right?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, white single women in particular, unmarried women, vote overwhelmingly for the Democratic Party. I mean, I saw a survey that was taken in April this year, and it was quite striking. You know, basically, if you took out white single women, the country's overwhelmingly Republican, overwhelmingly, men and married women. But single women vote overwhelmingly Democrat in large numbers. I'm just trying to recall what the ratio was. It was something like 70-30, which is quite striking. So you're seeing the Democrats under Kamala because she's a woman. She's a woman of color. And they're really trying to leverage the hell out of that. You know, that's a big change from Joe Biden, right? So she's more likely to motivate this class of people to come out and vote, of course, in a country where there's not compulsory voting. So you saw, for instance, at the Democrat convention last week or the week before, whenever it was, with this extraordinary focus on women's issues. I mean, it was honestly 80% of the speeches. I was there, and it was quite, you know, shocking that the issue of abortion, which of course they've reframed as reproductive rights, it sounds a lot nicer. You know, they talk about that all the time, over and over again. And I think that is, you know, it's partly belief. They believe in it, I think, but it's also partly politics. They want this class of, you know, this very large minority of the US to come out and vote. And it's probably going to work.
Can we believe the polls? Kamala leading in all polls? Really? Really?
Yeah, look, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, it's, you know, my personal view is it's somewhat embarrassing if that's the case, and it means people are very, you know, they're easily affected by propaganda. But you know, maybe they are. Look, I mean, I tend to check the betting markets more than the polls. I think they're more interesting, and they change obviously a lot quicker with new information, because you have to remember with the polls, you know, even when they come out, they were taken at least a week ago or at least 10 days ago. So they're not very up to date. And you know, just before I came on here, I looked at the average of the betting markets, which this outfit called Real Clear Politics does. And Trump's slightly ahead, slightly, only by a whisker, by half a percentage point. But he's now ahead again, and that's the first time he's been ahead in that, on that measure, for a couple of weeks. So, you know, so I think Trump's going to edge edge ahead more, the more Kamala Harris speaks and does interviews, which, of course, as you know, she's only done one.
Yeah.
But I don't think that went very well for her, really. And I think when she does another one.
Adam, it was heavily edited. That interview was heavily edited with ABC, Dana Bash.
It was quite strikingly bad, I thought. And not because she made any great errors, but it was just produced badly. It was very short. I mean, it was 18 minutes. That was the airtime, 18 minutes. And there's a lot of speculation, quite justified, I think, that the actual interview went a lot longer than that. And they just cut a lot of it. I mean, do you really think they set up, you know, all the cameras and all that effort for 18 minutes? I don't. So I think it probably was longer and we didn't get to see all of it. And, you know, she didn't really say anything new in that interview. I think, you know, she probably confirmed, you know, I mean, she wouldn't have changed too many votes. And if she did change any votes, she would have changed them against her, I think, because she didn't come across as very confident in herself and her statements were very woolly and vague.
And there's a debate to come, I think, within about a week and a half, isn't there? And,
that's right.
Did I hear correctly that she's okay with open mics so anyone can say anything? And one thinks of that debate she had with Pence where she kept on saying, I'm speaking.
Yeah, well, this is
she's looking for another one of those moments, perhaps.
Yeah, look, this is quite funny. I mean, she, yes, the debate's on the 10th of September. That's the only one that's been scheduled so far. And what's funny about it is in the debate with Biden, the Democrats, they insisted on muting the mics for the person who was not speaking, not meant to be speaking. And this time they're insisting the other way. Because obviously that went disastrously for Joe Biden, that complete disaster, that move by Democrats, because, of course, they just let Biden do all the talking, basically, and he kind of hung himself, really. But so I think they've decided that unmuted mics would be better for Kamala Harris because it's more likely Trump will talk over her. And that then, yes, she can then, you know, claim to be the, you know, the abused woman kind of thing on the stage. But look, who knows? I mean, I don't think it's going to make much difference either way, to be honest. And they have decided, as far as I know, that it will be muted, I think. But the debate's kind of still ongoing in the background. I don't think it's quite certain yet whether it's muted or unmuted. But Trump's himself said he doesn't really care either way.
No, he wouldn't. I wouldn't expect him to say anything else. So the bump, did Trump get a bump from that Butler incident? And if so, has that sort of ebbed away now?
Yeah, look, I think it has ebbed away. He definitely did get a bump from the assassination attempt, but that was, 13th of July?
Yeah.
And he did get a bump. And, you know, it's quite a striking how much politics has changed since then because, I mean, as you remember, you know, kind of the days after that, you had a lot of people just saying, oh, the election's over, you know, Trump's won in a landslide. And admittedly, he was facing Joe Biden still at that stage. But now, you know, it's a really close run. There's a new Democrat Party leader. And, you know, politics looks absolutely nothing like it did on the 13th of July. And, yeah, look, you'd have to say that event has just kind of seeped out of public consciousness a bit. To my surprise, I thought that it'd be more indelible. But anyway.
Speaking of surprise, the way that Joe Biden was disposed of and the way Kamala Harris came in as the candidate, and they do bang on about Trump being a threat to democracy. Is anyone saying, well, hang on, what happened to democracy here? Anyone saying that?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, Trump is saying that sometimes, and I think some Republicans say that. Yeah, look, I mean, the Democrats do get away with a lot of this propaganda about Trump being a threat to democracy. I mean, it's, you know, whether it works, I guess, remains to be seen in the, you know, for the election. But yeah, look, I mean, it was extraordinary how they removed Biden. And, you know, just a little bit of kind of off the record thing. I won't say who it was, but coming back from the Republican convention, which was toward the end of July, there are obviously a lot of journalists and staffers at the airport at Milwaukee, just, you know, waiting for their flights. And I happened to bump into a very senior Republican staffer, and he was just talking to me over a drink off the record. And it was quite clear that they did not think that Biden would be removed, right? Which I thought was really interesting.
Oh, okay.
So they weren't expecting it. They thought he'd dig in and they wouldn't be able to get rid of him. So, you know, of course, on the 21st of July, just a few days later, he was removed. So the point I'm trying to make is it came as a big shock to Republicans that Biden, well, at least the strategists that run the campaign, it came as a big shock. So look, I think they're still reeling a bit from that. I think they're still adjusting their strategy to Kamala Harris. And there's no doubt she's a harder opponent than Joe Biden. I mean, that's not hard. It's a low bar.
Yeah. I could do it.
So they're still adjusting to that. But, you know, they've still got, you know, what is it, 9-10 weeks to adjust. And I still think that, that Kamala Harris's honeymoon, I think, will fade away.
Okay, swing states. That move with RFK Jr. joining essentially joining the Trump campaign and moving out of the swing states but staying in other states, that's obviously a strategy to pull the numbers Trump's way.
Yes.
So, again, are the swing states where it all happens in the end?
Yeah, look, certainly that's true. I mean, Nate Silver, who your listeners may have heard of, he's a well-known pollster over here, and he has an election prediction model, which I think he updates every few days. And he updated it, I think, either this morning or yesterday, and it showed Trump winning the Electoral College by about 60% right. to 40%, their probabilities, but he'd lose the popular vote kind of overwhelmingly. So that's just a reminder yeah. that, yes, it is all about the swing states and the Electoral College. There's about 8 or 10 states in the U.S. They're all kind of the Arizonas, the Michigans, the Georgias, the Pennsylvania in particular. That's probably the most important mm-hmm. one because it's a big state with a big population and it's always decided by very close margins. So, so I think it is, those states really do matter, and you'll find that's where all the campaigning is going to be. I mean, that's where she is today. She's in Pittsburgh today, Pennsylvania.
Right, there you go.
Vice President. And Trump is, I can't remember, I think he was in Michigan yesterday. So, I mean, that's where they're focusing all their efforts. And it's very, very hard to predict. Like in a system without compulsory voting, it's hard. You don't know who's going to come out on the day. Yeah. So
could even come down to the weather, Adam.
Yeah, and so just on the RFK thing, I mean, that was really interesting. I mean, I'm kind of happy he did it in the end. It was very sad that his campaign, from my point of view, because I thought he was a good man and he should have done well. But he was given a terrible time by the media here. They really hated him, the mainstream media. They basically paid no attention to him. They wouldn't let him on the debate stage. So in the end, he had no choice, I think, but to join the Trump campaign, because I think it's clear from his views that that's where he's more aligned in general. And you never know, that may, pull 1 or 2 percentage points towards Trump in the end. That's what they're counting on. But I think it's really going to depend how much RFK actually goes out there and rallies for Trump. And so far he hasn't.
Also, I think Tulsi Gabbard has come out and endorsed Trump as well. Again, appealing to those female voters that we were talking about before. Will that have any effect?
Well, I mean, honestly, she's probably more useful than RFK, to be honest, because she is a young woman.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know if she's married or not, but she's an appealing figure. She was a very strong Democrat. She ran for president, of course, in 2020. She actually savaged Kamala Harris on the stage during their primary debate. That's quite famous over here. And yes, of course, she pulled no punches last week in endorsing Trump. And she also said she's going to campaign for Trump. So I think that does help him a lot. Of course, you've got Elon Musk now kind of on the record as barracking for Trump. So there's pretty deep pockets there, with Musk anyway. I don't know how much money he's given at this stage, but he could yet still. We don't know.
Back to RFK and the things he said about healthcare and vaccines, et cetera. He's been quite vocal about that. And, of course, we've been through COVID. How's that gone down, Adam? Because at his sort of rollout at the Trump rally that I saw, you've got a right of center, at least, MAGA audience cheering that. I never thought I'd see the day.
It is weird, isn't it? I know. It was actually, well, look, I think it's gone down very well. I think there is a recognition amongst ordinary people and certainly MAGA voters that the US has a lot of health issues, a lot of health problems, chronic health issues. People are dying earlier. The rates of autism, rates of heart disease are through the roof compared to what they were 50 years ago. Sure, some of it's choice and lifestyle, there's no question, but some of it is also what's in the food and the poor regulation of big food companies and the pharmaceutical manufacturers. So I think it's gone down well. And indeed, Trump's even been saying, make America healthy again. MAHA. It doesn't go quite as well as MAGA, but I've seen a lot of hashtags and a lot of people saying that now, and that's because of RFK. Trump's basically promised him, I think, to give him some senior role in the administration, maybe health secretary or something like that, if they win. I'm sure there is a deal behind the scenes. They say there's not, but there must be. And look, I think most most MAGA people, I think, welcome the fact RFK has joined them because they see him just like Trump as an iconoclast. In fact, far more of an iconoclast, really, than Trump. I mean, RFK is the real deal. If you want someone who doesn't like the establishment, you know, he's it. So I think, yeah, no, I think it's, I think the health stuff goes down well. And you won't find too much criticism. I mean, what is interesting, the Democrats don't say anything about the vaccines now, nothing. Because I think you'd have to be quite dumb not to realise that they did not live up to expectations. And, you know, and that's putting it mildly. And they should not have been forced on people. And they were.
Yep.
So best not to say anything.
Yeah, best not to say anything. Okay, final question. Final thought from you, Adam. Again, Trump's words just in the last few days, this is the most important election in US history, bar none. Is there a consensus around that, Adam?
Look, it's a really good question because, you know, everyone says that all the time about everything, right? About this election is the most important ever. Is it true? Is there a consensus? Yeah, look, I think it is. You know, I think it is. You know, I mean, I don't know about ever, so I'm not, you know, I mean, there's been a lot of elections in the United States, but...
Yeah, well, that's how he put it, but you know how he puts things.
But it's certainly very important because I think it really is, even more than 2016, I think it really is the establishment versus working class poor people, basically. I mean, putting it very, very, right. very simply, I mean, the Democrat Party, in my view, is the representative of the establishment now. I mean, there's no question about that. And Trump is the opposite of that, especially now he has RFK on board. I mean, Kamala Harris, you know, just to dwell briefly on the differences in their two personalities, Harris and Trump, I mean, you could not get, and this is certainly true, never in US history has there been so great a contrast between the two candidates. Never, ever, not remotely, right? I mean, Trump, for all his flaws and faults, is quite authentic. He just says what he thinks, right? I mean, and everyone knows that. There's no polish. I mean, his advisors keep trying to tell him, you know, Mr. Trump, talk more about this or talk more about that, and he just doesn't do it. I mean, managing him would be hopeless. It'd be a terrible job. Whereas she is the opposite. She's very, very extremely tightly managed. You don't really know what she thinks about anything. You know, she reads other people's speeches. I mean, she's kind of like the modern archetype of a politician, really, in a sense. I mean, you know, she's purely managed. So you've got that extraordinary contrast. But at the same time, you also have policy differences, but you also have those extreme personality differences. So, look, I mean, I think it is, you know, your most important election, at least since the Second World War, so.
Okay, well, that nails it. Okay, Adam Crichton, Washington correspondent for The Australian. Thanks for coming back on. Great to hear your reporting and your thoughts. And hopefully it won't be too long again before we have another chat. Adam?
Yes, indeed, Paul. Thanks very much. I'm off to dinner now. Have a good day.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.